Welcome back to Radio EcoShock.
You found the Radio EcoShock special on Arctic tipping points. In a few minutes, I'll talk with Dr. David Archer. But first, sea ice expert Peter Wadhams on fears of a methane burst. Professor Peter Wadhams, what are your thoughts about the discovery of more methane emissions coming from eastern Siberian coastal waters?
That's a new danger and one that could be extremely nasty. We don't know yet, but it's looking that way. What's happening is that because the sea ice is retreating much more in the summer than it used to do, it's exposing now all the continental shelves of the Arctic, especially in the Siberian Sea, East Siberian Sea, and the Laptev Sea, the shelves around the Russian Arctic, but also the areas, the narrower shelves around Alaska and Canada. And it's exposing those to open water during the summer. And because the shelves are shallow waters, the water warms up to about 5 degrees in places now, which it never used to do. It would sit at zero even in the summer because it wasn't exposed to the atmosphere for very long. But what's happening now is it's warming up to about 5 degrees, and that warming extends right down to the seabed. And the seabed contains a lot of offshore permafrost, where the permafrost in the Arctic extends out to sea. And that permafrost is now melting and retreating because it's being now warmed up by the warmer water. And that's releasing a lot of methane that was trapped under the permafrost. And this has only been observed in the last 2 or 3 years by joint Russian-Alaskan expeditions that have been going out into the East Siberian Sea and seeing huge plumes of methane bubbling out. And the methane detection systems that we now have are showing a blip of methane in the atmosphere that's increasing. Methane levels in the atmosphere had flattened off in the last decade or two, not for any known reason, but they had flattened off. But now they started to rise again. And since methane is a very, very active greenhouse gas, the concern is that this rise in methane might be due to this new release from the Arctic. And if that continues and all the subsea methane gets released in one go, that would give you a huge boost to global warming rates for a number of years. That methane exerts an influence on the atmosphere for about 7 years after release, whereas carbon dioxide is more like 100. So it's a big kick. It doesn't last so long, but while it's there, it's giving a real kick to global warming.
Well, given these worries about rapid changes in the Arctic, do you see a need for a plan B, like some kind of geoengineering, just in case we need to chill the Earth quickly?
I think we do need to think about that. The situation is so bad, so little is being done. I mean, the obvious way to counter global warming is to release less carbon dioxide and reduce our fossil fuel usage. But nobody in practice is prepared to do that. We won't do it until we're forced to by all the oil running out. So if we're not going to take the steps that we need to take to save ourselves by reducing our carbon dioxide production, then one has to consider maybe a techno fix might be the thing to try. So these ideas about geoengineering to try to reduce the radiative forcing that's warming us by things like changing the colors of clouds, by brightening them up, they sound a bit science fiction-like, but it could be that those other things we'll have to try in order to stop global warming from getting out of hand.
Well, as we wrap up, have I missed something important? Is there something else you would like to tell our listeners?
Well, I think the methane problem is one that we really should concern ourselves with. One of the problems about policymakers is that insofar as they do base themselves on the scientific consensus, it's usually the consensus of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change reports. They only come out about once every 4 or 5 years. The last one was in 2007. There's another one being prepared at the moment. But they're based on published scientific data as of the time that the report came out. So we're basing all our thinking and plans on the 2007 IPCC report which itself is based on measurements done up to about 2006. This methane catastrophe that's coming seems to be happening has only happened in the last 2 or 3 years. So the data has come in since the last IPCC report. So it maybe isn't being given the attention that it deserves. And I think we should be doing a lot more to measure what's going on the Arctic shelves and to really keep track of this methane increase. And if necessary, we might have to, that might be the prompt that we need to take action by some kind of geoengineering approach, because you're adding the methane kick to this carbon dioxide kick and maybe accelerating global warming that way.
Our guest has been Professor Peter Wadhams, the Arctic expert from Cambridge University in the UK. Thank you so much.
Okay, pleasure.
Radio EcoShock.
Notice that Dr. Peter Wadhams supports the calls for immediate action to save the remains of Arctic ice. He supports the call to action raised by the Arctic Methane Emergency Group. I spoke with that group's founder, John Nissen, a Cambridge-educated scientist who chose a career in computer software instead. Now retired, Nissen tried to alert authorities like America's John Holdren to new warnings coming from Arctic specialists like the Russian team of Natalia Shakova and Igor Samilyatov. They found large plumes of methane gas, the same powerful greenhouse gas which some scientists believe caused past mass extinction events. Nissen and his emergency group members are concerned a sudden burst of methane up to 50 gigatons could trigger a runaway greenhouse event, something humans couldn't stop and perhaps could not survive. I won't have time in this program to do justice to his argument. I have links in my blog to articles written by filmmaker Gary Hauser, who is documenting the new science, and prolific writer Sam Arcana. If you can stand a good scare, which may well be all too true, please follow this up in my blog at ecoshock.info. We'll also have more on the Arctic methane threat in coming Radio EcoShock programs. But one of the most respected scientists in the field, Dr. David Archer of the University of Chicago, says it is not time to panic yet. The real threat, the real fright, Archer says, is not in faraway Siberia, but right here at home, parked in your garage and built into everything we buy. It's the carbon, stupid. Is planet Earth approaching a climate tipping point due to methane bubbling up from the seafloor in the Arctic? This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith. To sort out this big question, we have climate scientist, author, and professor at the University of Chicago, Dr. David Archer. David, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Hi, Alex.
Before we head to the Arctic, we first need to grasp the way methane in the atmosphere becomes carbon dioxide. How long does that take, and why does it matter?
It takes about 10 years in our current atmospheric chemistry configuration for methane to get decomposed into CO2 in the atmosphere. And it matters because when you have a source of methane to the atmosphere, it builds up until it degrades as quickly as the source that you're adding to it. So if you have a longer lifetime in the atmosphere, the methane concentration would build up to a higher concentration before it reached a sort of steady state value.
Okay, and for listeners just joining us, we're also going to be talking about clathrates, and those are the frozen ice-like form of methane found in the seabed. David Archer, you published peer-reviewed papers on methane and carbon dioxide before the recent expeditions to the Siberian coast. In your article, Much Ado About Methane at realclimate.org, you cite papers you published in 2005 and 2007. They did cover the response of ocean clathrates to man-made climate change. Is it safe to say you're an acknowledged expert on this subject?
I seem to be accorded a moderate amount of respect, I guess, probably more than I deserve, yeah.
All right. Well, please tell us about the differences, please, about a chronic release of methane versus a catastrophic release.
Well, a chronic release is what I call when the methane is being released over a time span which is long compared to how long it lasts in the atmosphere, so longer than a decade. And what happens when you have a chronic release is that the methane concentration, the higher your release faster you're releasing it, the higher the concentration in the atmosphere will go, like I said earlier. But a catastrophic release is if you could release a whole bunch of methane on a time scale that's shorter than the lifetime. And so then you get kind of a spike. And that's where methane is really the most frightening, because there's so much methane in the hydrate deposits that if you could somehow dump it all in the atmosphere within a year or two, it could have a huge impact on Earth's, just apocalyptic impact on Earth's climate. And so that's kind of the scenario that you hear the concern about, is the catastrophic release.
And do you think such a spike of methane is possible?
The short answer is no, it hasn't really. There hasn't been a mechanism really proposed that could make that happen. Most of the methane in hydrates is buried under enough sediment. It requires sort of high pressure in order to form, that it would take a long time, hundreds or thousands of years, for global warming to reach down that far and make the hydrate melt and release its methane. There is also the potential that organic carbon frozen in permafrost soils that is melting could release methane. There are amazing movies of methane explosions in Alaskan lakes that Katie Walter has online. But the time scale for melting permafrost and decomposing it is also long. They're longer than the lifetime of methane in the atmosphere. And so they wouldn't be a catastrophic all-at-once release. They would be a slow, ongoing thing that would have a much milder impact on Earth's climate. One way to release it all at once is to have a submarine landslide. So if there's methane in hydrate down in the mud and suddenly you stir it all up, that hydrate can float like regular water ice floats in water. And that could be delivered all at once to the atmosphere. But the amount of methane that you have in any given area isn't enough that a single submarine landslide could really toast the climate of the Earth. You'd have to shake the whole planet somehow to make a catastrophic release that'd be big enough. Another possibility is if you have methane bubbles that are trapped in the sediment that escape because of, you know, melting ice or something, maybe that could happen all at once. And the researchers who are working in the Arctic, Shakova in particular, are claiming that there is a substantial amount of methane in bubbles underneath the hydrate in sediment that could come out all at once. And I guess I am skeptical of that, but, you know, they're the ones who are, you know, actually getting their feet wet in the Arctic, so I will defer to them in that regard.
And do we know if those methane plumes they are finding are new or if they are caused by human-induced climate change?
Well, that's a great question. What they're actually finding is high concentrations of dissolved methane in the water on the Siberian shelf, which indicates probably that methane is coming out of the sediments and going into the water. And by adding up how much is in the water and multiplying it by how fast gases can escape from the water, how fast it will evaporate from the water into the atmosphere, they can calculate how much methane is coming out of the Earth on the Siberian shelf. And the overall rate compared to the big sources of methane on Earth is fairly small. It's a few percent of the total rate of methane released to the atmosphere. Most of the methane is coming from freshwater swamps and rice paddies and things like that. So they're finding a larger flux than had been expected, but it's smaller than other fluxes, and so that makes it sort of less important. Then the question you actually asked was, do we know that this flux that they're measuring is human? And I think that's hard to know. The reason why the permafrost that they are working with is melting is because it's been flooded with water. It was exposed to the really cold conditions during the last ice age when sea level was lower, and now it's melting just because you've got this melted water on top of it, and so eventually it shouldn't be there at all if sea level were to stay at this level forever. So that change, which took place 10,000 years ago, the sea level rising and flooding these permafrosts, is probably what's driving the methane degassing rather than global warming actually changing the temperature of the water and causing this response. There was another study which found plumes of methane coming out of some slightly deeper water off of Norway. And there has been a change in temperature over the last 30 years of a degree or so, which could be responsible for the fact that the methane is coming out there. But it's not at all clear that that change in temperature over 30 years, you know, a couple hundred meters down in the ocean is due to human activity or whether that's just natural climate variation. It's probably more natural stuff because people haven't really warmed the deep ocean all that much yet.
This is Radio EcoShock. We are talking with Dr. David Archer, a published expert in carbon dioxide, methane, and climate change. He is a professor at the University of Chicago. Well, David Archer, we do have another check on all this. Are methane levels rising in Earth's atmosphere?
Well, they are higher than they were in the natural world, which we can get an estimate of from the little bubbles of air stored in ice cores. So it's an amazing thing. In the sunlight, methane breaks down in 10 years, but in the dark, in an ice core, you can have methane and oxygen sitting there for hundreds of thousands of years, and it never goes anywhere at all, apparently. So the methane concentration was rising, and then it sort of plateaued in kind of the mid-1990s, and nobody expected it to do that or really understands quite why. It could be because the Earth sort of dried out a bit, became a bit more arid, fewer freshwater swamps, or I've seen papers about whether changes in the amount of lightning could affect the chemistry of the atmosphere, or there's all kinds of human perturbations to atmospheric chemistry. But then just recently, just in the last few years, the methane concentration has started sort of edging back up again. And it's not clear why that is, but it could be coming from the high latitude northern hemisphere, the sort of Shakova kind of place.
And I can think of at least a half dozen well-known climate scientists, some of them guests on Radio EcoShock, who suggest a burst of methane may have triggered past mass extinction events like the one at the end of the Permian Age about 55 million years ago. Do you agree with that?
Well, the end Permian, that was the biggest extinction of all. And there is evidence of hydrogen sulfide. Actually, I've read hydrogen sulfide as the sort of killing wing of that extinction. If the ocean became anoxic enough that you got enough hydrogen sulfide that it leaked into the atmosphere, hydrogen sulfide is quite a poisonous gas. Methane is kind of the usual suspect in these things. Normally, more often you hear methane blamed for another climate event, which is at the end of the Paleocene-Eocene thermal maximum event, which was analogous apparently to the sort of global warming climate event in that, or the potential for that, in that there was a fairly sudden release of carbon and a warming, and then the whole thing lasted for sort of 100,000 years and kind of recovered. And there's been a lot of interest in trying to figure out where that carbon came from. The reason why methane is blamed is because methane has a very intense isotopic signature. So you could make the isotopic spike that you measure in sediment cores with a smaller amount of carbon. It's like putting in, you know, really concentrated dye into a bucket of water or dilute dye. You need more of the dilute stuff to get the final product that you might be looking for. But the problem is that the amount of warming from the Paleocene was a lot more than you would get from the small amount of carbon that you would need if you generated the whole thing from methane. So I personally am a believer that the carbon came from some other source, a more dilute sort of a dye than as methane. The bigger the source is, though, the harder it is to explain, you know, where it could have come from and to have it all come out quickly. I mean, you know, volcanoes, when they release CO2 to the atmosphere, it takes millions of years. And so that's way too slow to explain the Paleocene-Eocene thermal maximum event. So it's still up in the air, but I don't believe that methane has been justly convicted of any crimes against the planet yet, personally.
And again, some scientists and journalists who interview them are worried about methane from the Arctic could cause a runaway greenhouse effect. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, a runaway greenhouse effect involving methane, to me, what those words would mean is that you get some warming from some methane, which then causes more methane to come out, which gives you more warming. So a positive feedback in that sort of a cycle. But because methane breaks down so quickly, it's very hard to get as much radiative forcing, as much climate oomph out of methane as we are already getting from releasing fossil fuel CO2. So the response of climate to the methane is fairly muted unless it was just a huge release. And then you also would need the methane melting to respond very quickly to changes in the climate in order to have, you know, a feedback. And, you know, yet you look around at how methane comes out and all of those sources are slower than the lifetime of methane in the atmosphere. They don't respond instantaneously or within a year or two or something like that. They respond over centuries. And so I don't see the potential for a runaway greenhouse effect involving methane. But I do see the possibility that methane in ocean hydrates and carbon that's frozen into permafrost soils could eventually release carbon to the atmosphere that would add to the cumulative effect from all the CO2 that we've been releasing. So the methane wouldn't have much effect on climate in the next, you know, decades, but hundreds of years from now, the carbon from methane and from permafrost soils could be sort of like matching funds or something, that we put in so much carbon from fossil fuels and then the Earth throws in, you know, an amount that sort of matches what we do or something like that. So that would affect not the peak of the warming, but rather the long tail, which with CO2, as we talked about last time, 2 years ago, affects the climate for, you know, hundreds of thousands of years into the future.
Well, you know, this is a tough problem for a layperson to try and figure out, and that's partly why I called you. But I wonder, too, the stakes seem so high here. David, what if you're wrong? Aren't we playing with risks too dangerous to ignore?
I think that releasing CO2 to the atmosphere is already a risk too dangerous to ignore. I think suddenly getting worried about the climate when you think about methane is like, you know, thinking about, you know, getting fat from eating a little bit of icing on a huge piece of cake. You're already eating the huge cake. And so the methane is just sort of the icing. That's how I view it.
All right. Well, everyone in this conversation seems to agree on one point. Humans need to figure out a way to dial back the carbon dioxide in the atmosphere to reduce it by some means. Do we have any technology or change in civilization that could possibly do this?
The issue is not the technology. The issue is just making a decision. The main fossil fuel that we're concerned with is coal, because there's a lot more coal than there are oil reserves or natural gas. And so the big decision about Earth's climate is whether we burn all that coal or whether we decide to leave most of it in the ground. And if it just happened to turn out that we didn't have all this much coal, it wouldn't be anything that we would even worry about. They would just come up with new energy sources as a matter of, you know, normal human ingenuity and progress. I think the only question is, do we have the foresight and the collective intelligence to make the decision to leave it in the ground?
In September 2009, I interviewed you about your book, The Long Thaw, How Humans Are Changing the Next 100,000 Years of Earth's Climate. It taught me a lot. What are you working on now, and is a new book in the works?
Well, I've had a couple that just came out. I'm very proud of an edited book that Ray Pierre Humbert and I put together called The Warming Papers, of classic scientific papers going back hundreds of years that are at the foundation of the global warming forecast. And I just went online with my climate science class in a sort of open access format that anybody that wants to can create an account for themselves on my system and look at lectures and take quizzes and do labs and print out a certificate at the end if they make it. But I'm not writing any new books now. I'm working on modeling, actually, the methane hydrate inventory in the ocean. But it's, like I say, that's not really primarily a global warming question, as more a sort of fundamental scientific question, in my opinion.
Well, yes, I'm excited about your Open Climate Science 101 online. It looks like people can just go there, do it through the net, and teach themselves about climate science for free.
Yeah.
So I'm going to put a link to that in my blog at ecoshock.info so that people will be able to find it and use it. It's a great resource.
Well, 900 people have signed up so far. It's only been online for about 2 weeks now. But so far, I was afraid the wheels would fall off when lots of people started to load the system. But so far, it seems to be working great.
Beautiful. Well, David, what are your parting words for people worried about a methane-driven tipping point developing in the Arctic?
I once made the analogy on Real Climate that getting scared because of methane is like, because remember at the time, Toyota Priuses were in the news that they had issues with brakes or something. I own a Prius. It's a great car. I've never had any problem with it. But just as sort of a meme to hook into, that say you're driving down the street and car is going 50 miles an hour and suddenly the brakes fail and you're headed toward, you know, parked car in front of you or something. That's CO2. And then finding out that the accelerator might have gotten jammed and so you're going to hit that parked car at, you know, 55 miles an hour. That's kind of like when you add methane in, again, sort of like frosting on the cake. The time to be scared is not when you discover about the accelerator. The time to be scared is when you discover about the brake, because the impacts of CO2 are already much bigger than anything I've seen proposed from what could happen from methane. We're already in the danger zone.
We've been talking with scientist David Archer, a professor at the University of Chicago. You can follow more of his work at the science blog realclimate.org and find helpful companion links for this interview in my show blog at ecoshock.info. David Archer, thank you so much for helping us out.
It's been great. Thank you.
As I said, not everyone agrees with David Archer. This is a hot debate among scientists right now. How serious is the methane threat? As I stewed about this, David Archer came back with another bit of audio he'd recorded in his office. It's an awful bet. Here is Archer's point about worst-case scenarios and being right or wrong.
Well, the most catastrophic proposal that I've heard comes from Shakova, who says that there are 50 gigatons of methane gas as bubbles underneath the sediments on the Arctic shelf, the Siberian shelf, which could all come out all at once. And I don't know if I believe that the sort of slow warming that is happening there could trigger all that to come out all at once. You'd need some sort of a trigger, like some huge earthquake or something. But if it did come out all at once, there's a interactive model that I published on my webpage that you can play with and see what happens. If you put in 50 gigatons of methane all coming out in a year, you can compare the climate forcing, the radiative forcing, the energy imbalance caused by that methane. You can compare that against the radiative forcing from fossil fuel CO2. And what you'd find is that the forcing from the methane after a big burp like that would be much bigger than the forcing is today from fossil fuel CO2. But it would go away in a couple of decades. And by the end of the century, the forcing from fossil fuel CO2 will be higher even than the methane spike was at its worst. So it almost seems to me like it would be a chance for humanity to sort of try it before we buy it for keeps with CO2. Might not even be such a bad thing at that.
So there you have it. Maybe a good burst of methane and a climate shock is what we need to bring humanity to our senses, to make us finally get out of denial and act. It's a horrible thought, but nothing else has worked so far. You can post your thoughts on my blog at ecoshock.info or write me at this address, radio@ecoshock.org. Thank you for listening.